have joining us right now, Mr. Theo Fleury, who is somebody that you know, Alex.
I do. Theo, are you there?
Okay. We're not hearing anything on our headsets.
It's, hello. It's hello.
A particular moment. So we'll just keep talking, and hopefully in a moment we will hear from Theo, who is joining us to talk about not only a great career that he had in regards to. There we go.
There we are. Theo, are you there?
We'll just keep waiting. I'm sure he'll plug it in just a moment. Folks, we apologize for our technical difficulties.
Technical difficulties. Stay with us.
Theo, are you there?
I'm here.
There we go. A little bit of a... for some reason, a button got knocked over and we
it must be that telephone line between here and Calgary.
I guess so, yeah.
Theo, how are you? This is Alex.
The line on us, so.
Well, welcome to the show. My name is Kevin Tocci, and as you know Alex quite well. First and foremost, I got to say this is fantastic. I'm a big hockey fan, and I've for many years. Don't take it the wrong way. I'm a big Bruins fan, so there weren't many times when we saw you come to the Garden that I was cheering for you. But I thought you were probably one of the most dynamic players out on the ice. Not only as a guy who, you know, myself, I'm a guy who stands 5'7". Seeing a guy out there who not only played with the physical prowess that you had, but how you were able to put the puck in the net.
Well, you know, from a young guy, you know, growing up on the prairies in Manitoba, you know, I discovered early on that I could had a natural ability to put the puck in the net, and you know, obviously I was not the biggest guy in the world, and so I developed kind of a rugged style of playing, and you know, in the end, it turned out to be a fantastic, you know, 15 years I spent in the NHL, and, you know, accomplished a lot of goals and dreams I had as a kid, and, you know, it was fun to play that long and to be a part of so many big moments and big games, that's for sure.
Theo, this is Alex. When we toured with you with the Bruins alumni and you joined us in October was the first chance I got to meet you. And then again when we were up there in December. I was telling the audience before you came on that you gave all of us one of your books when we left. And I was telling them it was the quietest ride home on the bus I've ever been on. Everyone was just glued to that book. And there's portions of it that brings tears to your eyes, but then there's portions that tears of joy for you. Why don't you give us a little background on your book? It's very popular, obviously, in Canada and getting very popular here. But a lot of people aren't familiar with it down in this area. So why don't you give us a little bit of the background on the book and what you're doing now?
Sure. Well... You know, I think in my mind and a lot of people's minds, you know, I sort of left the game not on my terms, and I left the game probably a little bit early than I had intended to and wanted to, and you know, there was some secrets that I had been carrying around for many, many years that, you know, I only shared with, you know, very few people in my life, and you know, those secrets in the end were the secrets that, you know, ended my hockey career. And you know, I grew up in a pretty tough home with parents that struggled with their own addictions. And then, you know, when I was an adolescent, one of the coaches that I looked up to and I trusted and was a mentor, you know, molested me over 150 times. And you know, from that, I was left with, you know, a lot of guilt, a lot of shame, a lot of anger, a lot of resentment. And you know, there was really nobody in my life that I could tell, you know, what had happened to me. And so, you know, I sort of gravitated to the dark side of life for a little while and got into all kinds of drugs and alcohol and, you know, you name it. and you know, hanging around with the wrong people, making bad decisions, making bad choices, and you know, finally came, you know, sort of redemption where I knew that you know, I had to make a choice and a decision, and that was to, you know, stop those behaviors and reach out and ask for help. And you know, ever since I did that, September 18th of 2005, you know, my life has gone pretty well.
I have to ask, and that is, you know, you were able to be on a team that won the Stanley Cup. You won the gold medal in the Olympics. Having what had happened to you, how did that kind of change the, do you feel as though that changed the complexion of being able to win a cup and win a gold medal? Those accomplishments, do you feel that those, that what had happened in your life was over, that it overshadowed those accomplishments?
No, I don't think so. You know, you look at the history of hockey and how many guys have played the game and how many guys have actually won a Stanley Cup and a gold medal. You know, there's very few of us. So, you know, I think that there's always been a plan for my life. And I look at, you know, the way that I grew up and what happened with the coach as events that needed to happen in order for me to get to where I am today, and not, you know, where people look to me for strength and hope and courage. And, you know, a lot of people come up to me on a daily basis or email me or send me a Facebook message or a Twitter message basically saying that, you know, they found strength and they found hope today by me telling my story. So, you know, I don't really have a whole lot of regrets in my life, but, you know, I really like where I'm at today, and I really like where this is all heading, and really at the end of the day, that's the most important thing, is to really find the purpose for your life and the reason why you've been put on this earth. And, you know, sometimes we get dealt some pretty difficult cards, and sometimes we play them well, sometimes we don't play them well, and in the end, it's about, you know, getting honest and facing, you know, your fears and those problems head on. And if you do that, there's hope and there's light at the end of the tunnel.
When we were in New Brunswick, I think it was the October trip, I came to you in the locker room, and there was a woman outside the locker room that said that your office had said you'd speak to a couple of boys, and or a boy and his father, I'm not sure what, but I remember after the game, you took them in a room and spoke with them, and you spent probably a good half hour with them. And you could see on the kid's face that you really make a difference in the work that you're doing today. And you're really an inspiration to a lot of people, and telling people that they don't have to keep it a secret anymore, that there's help out there for them.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, that particular case in New Brunswick, you know, there's a lot of young boys and girls that have gone through a difficult time, and you know, I was, you know, honored and happy to be able to speak to that young man, because, you know, when I was that age, you know, the exact same thing was happening to me, and you know, I felt a lot of compassion and caring for this young man, and told him that you know, the life that I have today is fantastic. And I think by the end, both him and his dad, you know, found some strength, and really that's what it's all about, is, you know, we all have a story to tell, and we've all gone through some difficult things. And if we can help people by sharing our stories, then I really believe that's the purpose of why we're here and why we're on this earth, is to, you know, instead of walking by the guy that's down and out on the street and you know, maybe feeling sorry for him or having pity for him, you know, that's your opportunity to pick that guy up and stand him straight up and say, hey, you know, is there anything I can do to help you?
What's been the key to your sobriety to this point, to maintain it even on tough days still?
Well, I think it's about staying connected to people that you trust and love is really important. Helping, you know, helping get yourself out of your own head, and spirituality, you know, finding something greater than yourself that you can lean on and you know, get the help that you need.
Now, I have to ask, and that is, do you still follow the game? I mean, do you still follow what's going on in the National Hockey League to this day? Are you still following what the Flames are doing or the Rangers? I mean, do you have a team that you particularly follow these days?
Yeah, I follow the game. You know, I'm still a big fan, and some of my favorite teams are, you know, the Penguins. They play that kind of wide open style, and you know, that's the kind of game that I enjoy watching. And I enjoy watching high skill teams. You know, Washington comes to mind. San Jose a bit. You know, so you know, it's the game has changed a lot since I left it, and. You know, the guys are definitely faster, and they take care of themselves better. And I love the game. I always love the game, and I love being a fan of it.
And you're still playing quite a few games for the charity
Playing
now.
As much as I can. So I really enjoy that. You know, that tour we did back in November with the Bruins was. It was a lot of fun, and I really enjoyed meeting all you guys and having some fun.
Yeah, we had a great time. We always have a great time when we go up there. The Bruins, as you know, do probably about 30 games a year around here and another 20 up in Canada with Steve and the crew. It's really a good time, and it's always for a good charity up there.
Yeah.
Is the book still available on Amazon? Is it still available in the bookstores?
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, for sure it is. Yeah.
And what about a website? Do you have a website for the book?
Yep. TheoFleury14.com is the website.
And the book is Playing with Fire by Theo Fleury.
Here we actually have a copy of it, a signed copy that Alex got.
I have my personal signed copy here.
And how far? And it's got a foreword by Wayne Gretzky. That's pretty cool.
Yeah, I know. That's Wayne and I have a sort of a special friendship, and we don't talk to each other a whole lot, but when we see each other, we definitely enjoy spending time with each other and sharing a few stories. And he's a great guy, and he's always been an incredible ambassador for the game, and happy to see that he's enjoying his retirement.
What was it about your story that got him to do the foreword in this book?
Well, I'm not exactly sure because I didn't really ask him. I just asked him if he would be interested in writing the foreword, and he said he would, and we haven't really talked about why, but I just think that Wayne respected the way that I played and had an opportunity to play with him a few times in different Team Canada stuff and All-Star games. So, there was, and I played hard against him. And, I wasn't one of those guys to back down or go after him or make it difficult for him to play on a particular night. I always looked at it as he was taking money out of my pocket. So, always wanted to make sure that he played his best game against me, and I played my best against him. I think he respected that.
What were the challenges behind putting this book together? Was there any challenges or any challenging chapters in this book that you still remember?
It flowed pretty good, and I think the author did a great job of putting the book in my voice. And it was funny, after I talked to a lot of friends and old teammates that read the book, they basically said it was just like me sitting beside them on the couch and telling them my life story. So that was pretty cool.
It's definitely you talking in the book. I want to move on to another part of your life after hockey, and I've uploaded some songs on my iPhone.
Oh, that's right. And, there's music.
And one of them, I uploaded recently was Walk with Thousands, and we were up in New Brunswick again, and one night in the Portland pub, and he got up and started doing some songs.
Original music?
Original music. Why don't you tell us about the Death Valley Rebels?
Yeah. Well, you know, my fondest memories as a child are, you know, sitting beside my grandfather listening to him play the fiddle, and my dad, my uncles playing guitars, and, you know, singing some old country tunes. And so, you know, I grew up around music. I love country music. And, you know, when I was done playing, you know, I had a friend in the music industry, and, you know, called him up and said, hey, would you be interested in writing a song with me? And so I went to Winnipeg and, you know, sat in his studio for a week, and we went back and forth and, you know, wrote As the Story Goes is the first song. And you know, it's people make fun of country music because it's, you know, it's all about your dog, losing your dog and your girl and your car and your
all in the same day, right?
And you know, I wanted to write a song where we got all those things back, and you know, it was a fun process, and you know, the first song turned out good, so I kept going back to Winnipeg, and we kept writing music, and you know, and then I had a friend in Calgary here who's been a musician for a long time, and him and I got together, and he put together a band, and you know, we we call ourselves the Death Valley Rebels because back in the 80s when the Flames and the Oilers had those great teams, they called that stretch of highway between Calgary and Edmonton Death Valley, because teams would come in and get their butts whipped, you know, by both teams. And so that's why we named the band the Death Valley Rebels.
Now, are you strictly just a vocalist, or can you strum a little guitar too?
No, I'm strictly a vocalist and a writer, so.
Wow.
Why don't you tell us a little background on the Walk with Thousands and the Victor Walk that
sure.
I think
yep.
You got that coming up in May?
Mm-hmm. Well, you know, after I went out on my book tour, basically so many people had come forward and told us their own stories and, you know, shared so much about their own experiences with the subject of, you know, childhood trauma. And I really wanted to do something to bring more awareness to the subject, you know. As you know, in the United States, you know, when the Jerry Sandusky case came out, you know, people were a bit in shock. But, you know, and, you know, growing up with this secret, you know, I felt that I was the only person in the world that this was happening to, and, you know, quickly realized early on in my book tour that something that I thought was uncommon is probably the most common thing that happens to people. And you know, 1 in 3 girls, 1 in 5 boys before the age of 18 are sexually molested. So, you know, if you throw that stat out in the United States, you know, that's two eighths into one quarter equals about 635 million people in the United States that have been, you know, that have had that experience. And so, you know, we wanted to create more awareness, and so I walked from Toronto to Ottawa, which is about 400 kilometers over a 10-day period, just to raise awareness and meet people along the road. And you know, we met up on the front steps of Parliament and had a bit of a rally, and you know, then we were able to go inside the Parliament and talk to a few politicians about, you know, changing the laws and providing more places where people can go and heal. And and so it was a wonderful experience. It was a life-changing experience for all of us that were involved. And we wanted to write a theme song for the walk. And, you know, and that's where we came up with, you know, with Walk with Thousands.
Well, we really appreciate everything you're doing. I'm sure all these victims, you know, realize that they're not alone, and a lot of that's because of you and the work you're doing since your hockey days.
Well, I appreciate that. You know, it's extremely rewarding to help people, and be there for them when, you know, they're going through some really, really tough times and difficult times, and that you can relate to them is pretty cool.
As you know, the Boston area had its own cases of sexual abuse in the last few years. You know, that's one of the reasons I wanted to have you on the show down in this area. So, you know, people realize that it's not just here and it's not just them.
Yeah, it's pretty much the biggest epidemic on the planet. You know, I haven't run into anything that even comes close to it. And, you know, anything we can do to help bring more awareness and let people know that they have to be very diligent with their kids, leaving them with strangers and people, because, you know, a lot of these guys hang out in kids' organizations, and, you know, they build the trust of everyone around them, and once they have that, then, you know, that's when the grooming process starts, and next thing you know, your kid's being molested by somebody who has put themselves in a position of power and trust, and just be careful out there with, you know, who you leave your kids with, and do your due diligence, and if you feel something's not right, then it probably isn't right.
Where have, being a public speaker and somebody who's motivated to advocate for sexual abuse victims, where have you been speaking recently, and do you have anything that's going to be over on the East Coast anytime soon?
Well, we haven't really broken into the U.S. market yet because I've been so busy up in Canada. You know, I probably do probably 40 to 50 speaking engagements every year up here in Canada. So, you know, I've started to, I was at actually St. Cloud State University. I think it was either after or before I was with you guys on the tour in New Brunswick. And it was a wonderful experience and got to meet some really cool people. And so, yeah, you know, anybody out there that's, you know, maybe looking to have me come out, I would love, you know, I always loved coming to the Boston area, and you know, it was great to, you know, I remember playing, you know, in the old garden there in Boston, and it was always an awesome experience to play there, and you know, I love seafood too, so.
I have to ask you at least a couple of hockey related questions before we let you go. You know, during your days, who was the favorite goalie that you looked forward, that you salivated looking forward to facing, is there a particular team that you liked facing when you took the ice?
Well, when it came to goalies, you know, I look forward to all of them coming. You know, I think the guy that I had the most difficulty was probably Dominic Hasek. You know, he was one of those guys that was, you know, you could never get a read on him. He was kind of a road hockey type of goalie, and he was good at reading your eyes when you were coming down. You know, obviously, the old Battle of Alberta was, you know, those games were the best games to play in. They were the most fun. They were the most difficult. They were the most taxing on your body, and you know, it was a great rivalry, and it was awesome, you know, to be a part of it. You know, similar to, you know, Boston, Montreal, you know, when you're getting dressed, you know, you knew that night you were going to war, and it was going to be painful and difficult, but at the end of the night, it was going to be a lot of fun.
Any particular Boston Bruins player that you... Yeah, you might have had a rival with, or that you enjoyed playing against, or that you didn't like playing against?
Well, we only got to see each other a couple times a year.
Yeah, right.
So, you know, there was never... You know, I would have loved to have the opportunity to play against Kenny Lindsay, and that would have been quite the battle between the two of us. So,
well, you did in October.
Yeah, that's right. But we're a little bit getting long in the tooth, so, you know, we're a little bit more mellow we're not playing for a Stanley Cup, so, you know, the competitive juices don't flow the way that they used to. But, you know, I broke Cam Neely's nose in Calgary one night with an elbow, a well-placed elbow, and I think for the rest of the times that I played against him, he literally wanted to kill me. So, you know,
but he's a lot bigger than you, too.
That happens in hockey, and, you know, I wasn't going to back down from anybody, and certainly not him.
Well, we want to definitely thank you for not only sharing your story, but talking about your book, Playing with Fire, which is definitely available. Again, the website is?
TheoFleury14.com, and I'm on Facebook and I'm on Twitter, so I'm out there, you know, all the time. So I would appreciate, you know, any comments or whatnot, and you know, hopefully you go out and buy the book.
And hopefully, if somebody approaches you to write a screen, you know, a movie or a screenplay about it, maybe you'll come back on and talk about that.
I would love to.
That'd be fantastic. There he is, Theo Fleury. Anything you want to say in closing?
Thank you, Theo.
No, I just thank you for having me on, and I appreciate the time and the opportunity.
Hopefully we'll see you next trip.
Sounds good.
We'll step aside, and when we come back, more Monday Night Talk. Don't go anywhere.